J'ai plumé la tête de mon alouette.
J'ai plumé la tête de mon alouette.
J'ai plumé la tête de la queue.
Hello and welcome to Nerd Kitchen. This is Max Da Vinci, and I am joined by Nandita Iyer of Saffron Trail. She is a food blogger. She's and also now a best-selling author of The Healthy Everyday Vegetarian. It's available on Amazon and Kindle, and the Kindle version as well. Please go check it out. In our previous episode, we were talking about the building blocks in the nutrition space. Mainly we spoke about carbs, proteins, and fats. And in this episode, we're going to talk about vitamins, minerals, and let's see where that goes from there. So Nandita, welcome back to the episode again.
Yes. Hi, Max. Good to be back.
So vitamins, as you said, right? Vitamins are of two types. There are fat-soluble and water-soluble vitamins. Your fat-soluble vitamins are mainly vitamins A, D, E, and K.
That's right, yeah.
And I mean, again, like we always say, adequate absorption of these vitamins, you know, depends upon the fat intake and absorption, and except for vitamin K, because, you know, like fat soluble vitamins are not easily excreted. So if too much of anything can still, you know, be dangerous to an extent. Vitamin A now is probably one of the most popular ones that everyone probably knows of, because of a lot of the foods we eat. And it helps, for example, in the immune system, bone growth, reproduction, and sort of that. And of course, the reason why I bring up vitamin A is because as kids, one of the things we hear is, what we learn at least, is that night blindness comes as a deficiency of vitamin A. So that's something I remember from school times.
Right.
So if we had to pick out some of the foods that are in the vitamin A, and where we kind of sometimes fall apart. Vitamin A should definitely come from eggs, milk. Where else? Like spinach, maybe?
Yeah, just to, you know, take a step back on the whole vitamin angle. So I think a lot of us don't really understand the difference between vitamins and minerals. We just club them together. But vitamins are essentially organic substances, and they are produced by plants and other animals. And our human body only manufactures vitamin D. So to get a source of all the other vitamins, we have to consume it in the form of food, which is why, you know, it's very important to know what foods contain what vitamins, so we can ensure that we include all of these in our daily diet. There's, of course, the supplement way to get all this, but nothing like including it in our diet, so everything gets absorbed along with the food that we eat, and we don't have to really look at taking something additional. A supplement. So coming to vitamin A, I think you already summarized the, you know, ingredient. I mean, sorry. Coming to vitamin A, you already talked about some of the foods that have it. Actually, for meat eaters, the biggest source is the liver, liver of any animal meat, like chicken liver and stuff like that. But then eggs, spinach. And the easy way to remember how to consume, you know, good quantity of vitamin A is all the yellow and orange colored fruits and vegetables. So when we say eat the rainbow, it means that you eat foods of different colors every day. You know, even if you go to a market or a supermarket, try to pick out fruits and vegetables in all possible colors for the week. So, you know, at least through the week, you're consuming a whole range of micronutrients. So in this case, it's going to be, you know, mangoes, oranges, you know, yellow bell peppers, pumpkins. If you get that orange colored sweet potato, you can go for that. So all these, just remember yellows and oranges, and make sure that at least one, you're eating at least one yellow fruit or vegetable in a day.
So that's a very interesting parallel you bring in about the color and the vitamin. That's something I'm fascinated by. I never knew what, I mean, yeah, now that you say it this way, it kind of all, it makes sense, because otherwise, yeah, I've thought about, yes, carrots and, you know, eggs and things have it, but Now that you say anything that's yellow and orange, like, yeah, okay, that's very interesting.
See, it's a simple, it's a very simple way, like even a child can understand. And, you know, even if you just stick to a rainbow colored, you know, a palette from which to choose your weekly foods, that is like literally going through all the vitamins and minerals in your week. So you don't really have to worry about making sure, did I take something with vitamin A? Did I take something with vitamin C? No, it just like you cover it all, right? It's very easy. So that's one good way to remember things.
Well, that's a fabulous one. I'm going to go use that again. So, and then you were just mentioning about vitamin D. So like vitamin D is primarily supplied by a diet, but also by sunlight. And exposure to the UV rays triggers vitamin D. Now, for people in colder climates, or especially places where I am from, we only get like 150 to 200 days of sun. And so lot of us here at least have vitamin D deficiencies. When I go to the doctor for my annual, that's the only thing he says. Everything's fine, but you need your shot of vitamin D. And of course, this depends upon the geographic location, but then that's why that's one of the vitamins I've been looking for actually whenever I read a lot about, is because I'm deficient. I try to see, okay, how are ways I can, bring it into my food, and what different things can I incorporate in my diet so that I don't have a vitamin D deficiency.
So you'll be surprised to know that despite living in India, a lot of us in Indian cities are suffering from vitamin D deficiency purely because we avoid the sun. You know, we step out of the house when it's not sunny. And even, you know, we apply sunscreen and we go out. And, you know, we just are mostly indoors these days, especially if you have a desk job. You don't even know what weather it is outside because you're in AC and you're in this steel and like chrome and glass building indoors, and you have no access to an open window. It's all sealed and you don't know what is outside unless you take a walk during lunchtime or something like that. So increasingly we are finding ourselves deficient in vitamin D, and it manifests in like the strangest of symptoms, like just like tiredness and you feel mentally down, and, you know, some people even end up thinking that I'm going into a depression or something. It just manifests in strange ways, and it's a very simple test, and just checking your blood level, vitamin D in your blood. And, you know, when it is seen that it is below the normal limit, immediately, we are started on supplements. So the thing is that vitamin D, especially for a vegetarian, unless you're having that fortified milk or fortified cereal, it's not easy to get it via your diet. And so I think in this case especially, and if the levels are low, and as shown via blood test and as recommended by your doctor, if it is low, then the best way to do it is, you know, being on supplements. And sometimes the blood levels are so low that at least for 4 to 5 doses you need it via intramuscular injections, and then you can be on an oral supplement. Because it's also very important. It controls a lot of other functions in the body, and we just don't realize that what is wrong. You know, it can just, it can fox anybody. But at least now the consciousness among people is quite high that, you know, people are deficient. There's a lot of stuff in the press, etc. So people are aware, and, you know, because this vitamin D and vitamin B12, earlier, these blood tests were not done regularly, but now it's regularly done, and, you know, people are getting diagnosed much more, and it's easily rectified by taking supplements also.
Yeah, and that's why it's a weird one, right? Because if you're a vegetarian, now the most popular sources for vitamin D, apart from, you know, the sun, are like your tuna oil, cod liver
fatty
oil.
Fatty fish, yeah. Yep. Fatty fish mainly, yeah.
These fish oils. And it reminds me of the good old cod liver oil from when we were kids. But
that's true.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, I'm sure that was given for a reason. And, you know, of course, it was a terrible thing to take as kids. We hated it. But I'm sure it had its benefits, because on a vegetarian diet, that was like a good source of vitamin D.
Yeah. So that's why I keep, you know, reading about it, saying, okay, what are ways other than taking supplements. And unfortunately, I haven't found too many of them other than, like you said, fortified cereals or, and those things also are not inexpensive. So that can expensive pretty quickly. The next one I thought we should talk about in the fat soluble ones is vitamin E, right?
Yeah.
Because vitamin E, you know, it has a lot of health benefits, like for heart health and
It's a powerful antioxidant. So it is, it again has benefits in, it like literally affects everything in your body in a beneficial manner. So
it also helps in hair growth and things like that. So there, at least I'm way, way more luckier because there's a lot of tasty foods that, you know, that including in your diet can help you out. Like, for example, you have almonds, you have avocado, hazelnuts, peanut butter, all of these. So
all the nuts and seeds, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's all things that you like to eat. And so that it's not like, you know, it's not difficult to add this to your diet. And that's even more reason to eat Nutella because hazelnuts are rich in vitamin E.
With the added burden of sugar there, of course.
So you could make your own, and that's not too difficult then. You can cut out all the palm oil and use something else. That's about vitamin E.
So the one thing to remember about fat soluble vitamins is that please don't self-diagnose yourself. Depending on your levels, your doctor will prescribe the dose. And like we discussed earlier, these are not excreted by the body. So any excess gets stored in the liver. And sometimes if you are really taking a very large dose, it can even cause toxicity. So always be careful when vitamin A, D, E, never self-dose yourself with any supplements. Via food, you're fine. Because, you know, food, you can rarely eat that much quantity of anything to cause an overdose. But just be careful about the supplements.
Speaking of excretion by the body, the vitamins that are that can be excreted by the body are the water soluble ones, right? So that's your B and C. Now, they're both probably very important, and we probably hear a lot about them, especially C, right? Now, whenever you have people falling sick or something like that, immediately, you know, your moms and everyone say, "Oh yeah, you need vitamin C. Here, have an orange. Here, have a lemon." Yeah. One of those.
Yeah.
And I've always, as growing up, I wondered, is this just something people say, right? And only later I realized, okay, not probably. There is some. It makes some sense because vitamin C, you know, is important for the bones, collagen, your blood vessels, and it also helps in absorbing iron. So,
And immunity
for no
as
reason.
Well. Yeah.
Yep, and immunity as well, which is why every time someone falls sick, you go to the hospital, you take a bag of oranges with you.
Yeah.
When we come to B, right? B12 is what, you know, a lot of us know, and then there's a lot of B12 supplements and tablets you say, and, you know, growing up, like you had these power drinks that, you know, you'd mix in water, which are all full of B12 that you drink in the summer, right? For fatigue and weakness and things like that. Beyond that, what do you think are like sources for B12 that we could be adding to our diets as vegetarians or, you know, even meat eaters?
See, like meat eaters have plenty of sources, like pretty much almost all meat has B12, animal sources of protein. But then there's milk, cereals, again, fortified cereals and milk have B12. Also, fermented foods for vegetarians are a good source of B12.
I didn't know that.
But then again, if you cook, you know, it's heat labile and it may lose a lot of the active ingredients. So especially what you ferment and you drink it or eat it without cooking, like a kombucha or fermented drinks, etc. They are a better source of B12. And also, these are frequently supplemented also by your general physician or your doctors because there's no, you know, danger of any toxicity. And you know, sometimes it's just easier to take this via a supplement, because even for vegetarians, the sources are relatively few as compared to the other vitamins. So it just becomes like D, B12 is also easier, you know, to just take a supplement if you eat out a lot and you're not sure about your diet and, you know, you feel like you can't, it requires a little more effort to get in B12 for a vegetarian or more so for a vegan diet. So it's not wrong to look at supplements for this.
So having spoken about vitamins, let's move on to minerals. Now, minerals, like you had said at the start, vitamins are something you get from your food, their plant and animal sources, whereas minerals are different, right?
So exactly the opposite. Vitamins, you can consider them as organic, but minerals are inorganic elements. And they are usually available from like soil, rocks and water, etc. And, you know, so it's an indirect source. So especially, you know, the water you drink or from. So that's why you know the word mineral water, the term, right? So actually water that is, you know, extracted out of essentially those springs and stuff. So they are rich in minerals and that kind of stuff. So
because of the rocks that the
glaciers are. Yeah, the rocks and it's been there, etc.
Minerals, yep, and then the water which is bottled from the so-called glaciers that
springs and stuff
went over these rocks probably will be rich in minerals. When we talk about minerals, let's stick to the two major ones, calcium and iron, and maybe zinc as well. So calcium, I think, you know, is pretty well known, is that it's a primary mineral in bones, teeth, and it is. But then it's also needed for, you know, your muscles and nerves and clotting. And there, I mean, a lot of, because of its white and all, a lot of people know that, okay, milk gives you calcium, which is like as kids, we drank liters and liters of milk saying they're rich in calcium. But what other sources do you think also have calcium?
So there's, of course, all dairy products, so yogurt, cheese, etc. And then there's spinach and a lot of green leafy vegetables as well. So if someone is vegan, they can focus on eating a lot more green leafy vegetables for the calcium intake. Also things like sesame seeds, that's also rich in calcium. So there are a lot of non-dairy sources as well.
This white thing of like dairy products have calcium took me down the same, and started exploring what else can be there. One of the things I found, and it was really funny, is because that tofu also has a lot of calcium.
Yes, right? Tofu is also, so that's a good vegan option for calcium.
Correct. And that's why I made that connection saying, oh, everything white probably has a lot of calcium in it.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. Yes.
So then we come to iron, and iron, unfortunately, you know, a lot of people have iron deficiencies, people are anemic, and you would think it's only people, you know, who are undernourished or something like that. But then it's iron deficiencies are very common these days, even among, you know, people, young people and working class people.
That's right. So in case of iron, sometimes it's not just the diet deficiency, but like in young women and, you know, teens who have just started their period. Sometimes it may be a case of excessive bleeding, etc., during the period, which could also lead to an iron deficiency. And it's good to consult a gynec or even, you know, for that kind of problem and address that problem as well. Also, in older people, sometimes they may have some kind of gastrointestinal bleed or something. So in case of iron, don't just look at the diet, but sometimes it could be something else in the background, and it's important to, you know, get that investigated as well. But of course, that's not in the most common cases. You know, the most common case, of course, would be some kind of dietary deficiency or not eating iron-rich foods enough, or generally just not eating a balanced diet and the right foods enough, especially in teenage, etc., for girls, when you're more like you're out all the time and you're not focusing on your food and at the same time they reach their puberty. So all those factors put together sometimes has a temporary phase of iron deficiency in their life.
And then with iron, I think if it's green, it's probably has a lot of iron. Does that rule hold true?
Greens have iron, but a lot of other things also have. So I can't really, you can focus on greens. Greens give you a lot of other things like calcium and, you know, so it's a good thing to always include some sort of green leafy vegetables in your diet throughout the day. But a lot of meat sources like, dark meats have iron, like beef, etc. Then there is also, the good thing is the vegetarians from dried beans, all kinds of dried lentils has a reasonable level of iron. And, like all your dals and beans, all of them. And things like dates, prunes, all these. So even during pregnancy and these stages, women can focus and eat more of these foods, include these foods in their diet. Even though they are already put on iron supplements during pregnancy, it's also good to include all these in the diet.
Ah, that I remember now. And the final one we should probably tack on is zinc. Now, yes. Zinc is not one of the big mineral groups. It's probably a trace mineral, if you may. But it is important because it's involved in growth, development, your immune system, and also your hair and things like that. And of late,
it's also very important these days for diabetics because it helps in the, in the insulin regulation, etc. So it's also plays an important role in, keeping your blood sugar levels balanced out. And
so when it comes to zinc, almonds is one thing I know. What else should we be adding to our diet?
So this, the wheat germ, the outer covering of the grains is a good source. So, which is why when you eat whole grains, it's good. Or sometimes you can just add a little bit of wheat germ to the bread or any baked stuff or even roti atta to add that little bit. Again, not too much because it's also very high in fiber and it may prevent absorption of other, micronutrients. But a little a day. Yogurt is a good source. Oats is a good source. And eggs are a good source. And then, of course, things like oysters and shellfish and stuff. But there are enough and more sources even for vegetarians like yogurt and oats and wheat germ, even eggs for people who eat eggs, of course. So, quite a bit of, I think all these, if you eat on a daily basis anyway, you will have enough supply of zinc in your body.
Got that. And so if you have been following the previous episode and now, you would notice that we never spoke about quantities or such, right? Because we don't want to get into the recommended dietary allowances of every food group and things like that. But we're trying to mostly keep this as saying, okay, that's we're repeating ourselves, I know. But as we said from the very first line that we started out, as long as you're consuming enough of these various vegetables or meats or whatever you may, you should be good. Right. Versus counting grams and milligrams of something
that's
and saying, okay,
true, because this is a lifelong exercise. And I don't think anybody would have the patience or the, the motivation to count what they're eating every day. You can do it for a month, 2 months, even 6 months. But beyond that, I don't think anybody can stay motivated to, keep calculating every macro and micronutrient in their diet. And, essentially, if you look at the macronutrients, that's like the body of a car. And the micronutrients are like the seatbelt. So you can't just wear a seatbelt and say that I'm okay because the car itself has to be safe in the first place. So they are so interdependent on each other that your macros have to be good. You have to have a balanced diet. And then it will automatically include the micro also. And, you know, you can't just say, I'm going to pop in supplements every day and not focus on eating right and eating, having a balanced diet. Just eating those supplements is not going to help you much. So I think one has to look at it from a long-term perspective and also from a very holistic way where you're not really counting things and stuff, but think of it as a lifelong project that you, if you want to eat healthy and you want to stay healthy, that this is the path and you know the broad guidelines, and I'm sure our gut instinct kicks in and you know how it works. It's not really a rocket science.
Yeah, and also it's not like we're saying that you shouldn't eat anything that you want to. You definitely should because you only have one life. But yeah. I think the key is portion control, right? As long as you're eating maybe just two cookies and you're done, or you're just eating a slice of cheesecake and you're done, you're okay. It's only when you're like, I'm going to eat a slice of cheesecake every single day of the week. That's when habits like that is probably what gets us into trouble.
True.
And like we were alluding earlier, is that reason why a lot of people have these problems with low carbs or gaining weight or calories is because of decisions like those. So yeah, you want to go eat a pizza, go eat one, but just not every day of the week. So
that's true.
Because I mean, you should also indulge. We just cannot be eating salads or these healthy foods all the time. Yeah, I mean, that's not true. Not to say that healthy foods cannot be fun, but it's okay to indulge as well, as long as there is portion control.
No, absolutely. That is, and like I said, this is not for a week or a month, and you can't possibly restrict yourself throughout your life. So you have to find out the path that makes you happy and you're most comfortable with, because eating food is also a joy, a part of one of the joys of life, and it has to be indulged in, and you have to, just do the best you can.
But I mean, like I said, you can also make healthy food, fun and tasty, and it doesn't have to be boring. Look no further if you need inspiration. There is Nandita's book, The Everyday Healthy Vegetarian. Only some of the recipes made to a book, but then you also have her blog, which is saffrontrail.com, and which is a treasure trove of recipes meticulously collected over more than a decade, 13 years to be specific. So yeah, healthy food can be fun, can be can be tasty, but at the same time, it is also okay to indulge. On that note, Nandita, it was an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, and we'll be delighted to have you for future episodes as well.
Sure.
So thanks a lot, and then for everyone else, you're listening to the Nerd Kitchen. As always, we're available on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or whatever is your favorite source of getting your podcasts. Please check out, you can find us on Twitter at Nerd Kitchen Pod, and please check, please come back for further episodes. Until then, this is Max Devincy signing off. Thank you.